Continuing on, as Chad mentioned earlier, in our series on spiritual transformation, and we kind of covered four of the major components of the self, right, in the biblical and classical understanding of what makes a person, what makes a self. We looked at how all these different various components, how the Bible talks about those, and how they relate to one another, and how that each of those must be changed and are changed through partnership with God. This spiritual transformation and making you the person God wants you to be, making you like Jesus, is not something that God is going to do to you. It doesn't work that way. You don't get struck with a lightning bolt one day and all of a sudden you're this perfect disciple. Or this perfect, this person whose life is dominated by love and joy and peace, which is the ultimate goal. You don't get struck with a lightning bolt and all of a sudden your life is good. Okay? In the deepest, truest sense of that word. Good not in terms of ability to follow rules, like we've said many, many times, but good in terms of beautiful and flourishing. Which is what God intends for us. It's what He designed people for. But God doesn't do that to us. He does that with us. He invites us on this journey. And it requires effort on our part. And it requires training. It requires us being together. And it requires searching the Scriptures and the Spirit to determine how best that we as individuals and as a group live out this good life, the good life here in our world today. And it doesn't, that's the critical part that we have to understand, is that the good life for us is going to be different than it was for, in a lot of ways, going to be different than it was for Paul. It's going to be different than it is for, say, Jasper in Tanzania or Jose in Guatemala. It takes work and it takes training. And all of these things that we've talked about doing from the very beginning are hard. It's hard to take a good, hard look at your life and evaluate yourself and see where your weaknesses are, whether they're emotional, or this, like we talked, this warfare within the body that Paul talked about, that you know and you want to do good and you don't choose evil, but just sometimes automatically without thinking you're doing the evil thing, right, or doing the wrong thing. From front to back, whether it's your thought life, the first thing we talked about, what you think about, which you have ultimate control over, what you think about, what you bring before your mind for recollection or for consideration, or whether it's your emotional life, the things that you feel, and if your life is being controlled by your emotions, and on down the line, your will, what your choices are, what you choose, all of those things, working on this stuff is challenging and it's hard. And this, what we're going to talk about today, is sort of a practice, I suppose, or a discipline in some ways, that is absolutely critical because all of this stuff is hard. Okay? I want to read Matthew 12. So we'll start with our text here, Matthew 12. So at that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some heads of grain and eat them. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath." And we talked about before, the Pharisees were very, very, serious about following God. They weren't just jerks. Some of them probably were. Well, I guess obviously, but... They were very serious about following God, very serious about the laws. And one of the most defining characteristics of the law, one of the most defining characteristic of being a Jew, was observation of the Sabbath. But Jesus answered, "Haven't you read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and he and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for them to do, but only for the priests. Or haven't you read in the law that the priests on Sabbath duty in the temple desecrate the Sabbath and yet are innocent? I tell you that something greater than the temple is here. If you had known what these words mean, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. So they challenged Jesus and his companions for it. As they were walking along, on this Sabbath day, they stripped off some heads of grain from the, you know, whatever grain was in, right at that time. You rub it between their hands, get the chaff off, and pop it in your mouth and eat it. And they observed this, and they were very just scandalized by this fact. Jesus said, "You're missing the point of the Sabbath. You've totally missed the point, actually, of the entire law. You didn't understand when the prophet said, when God said through the prophets, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice.' It's all along, it's always been this way." He said, I'm not changing anything. This isn't a change. It's always been this way, and you've always missed the point. The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." And going on from that place, he went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there, looking for a reason to bring charges against Jesus. They asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" He said to them, "If any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." Of course. And he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." So he stretched it out and was completely restored, just as sound as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they might kill Jesus, because it seemed to them that he disregarded or abrogated their Sabbath laws. Okay, which is like I said, is critical to their understanding of who they were as a people. And he said to them, "A Sabbath," and this is in Mark, in this same series of Sabbath controversies, or a few of them occurred in Mark. And in that, so in this context, he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." Okay, so we can take these series of Sabbath controversies out of the Gospels, and we can say, therefore, we don't have to pay attention to this stuff anymore that's in the law. We can feel free to mow your yard on the Sabbath day. You know, somehow, like when I was a kid, that was the big thing. You know, it was a scandal if someone on your road, you know, mowed the yard on the Sabbath day, right? But it wasn't the Sabbath day, it was Sunday, but regardless, anyway. We don't have to pay attention to that anymore. You know, Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. The Sabbath's made for man, not man for the Sabbath, and so on and so forth. Son of Man, Lord of the Sabbath. We don't have to pay attention to that, right? And so far as that goes, that's true. It's not breaking a law of God's to mow your yard or whatever, wash your car. That's what those two things, for some reason, were the big things on Sunday. But I think we need to stop and think a minute. Okay. And Matthew 12 begins this way. You know, this is we just read Matthew 12, the beginning of Matthew 12. The very first sentence we read. "At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath." This is another case where these chapter divisions in the Bible really screw you up, okay? The very first thing we read is, "At that time, Jesus had this series of Sabbath controversies," okay? So what's the context for the Sabbath controversies? What did he say right before this? Sorry. "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. What had happened is these folks who observed these things that Jesus was doing, they had taken what was meant for good, what was meant to bring rest and peace, and turned it into a burden, right? Or into a law, into another method of keeping score, right? And turned it into another way to climb the ladder to God, another way to earn something from God, when all along, since creation, the idea of stopping and resting, the idea of not just stopping and resting on this day, but the entire idea of being a person of God was rest and comfort and peace. God never intended for human beings to be stressed out at the end of their rope, running through themselves. Right? What's Jesus? What's the picture Jesus paints here of following Him, of being a disciple, of being a true human being, of having the good life? Rest. Comfort. Gentle. Humble. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. That's interesting, isn't it? All the way back to Exodus, the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, to keep it special, to keep it separate and unique. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy. So even the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, even it referenced the fact that the idea of rhythm within our lives, the idea of rhythm of work and participation in the world and productivity and activity, the rhythm of that with stopping. The word Sabbath means just stop. The rhythm of activity and working and rest. It doesn't go back to the Ten Commandments. It says it goes all the way back to creation. It says God does life this way. It says God did it this way. So it was critical to who the children of Israel were. This idea of this is one of their, you know, the Ten Laws. The Ten Commandments is just part of their identity, something that set them apart. But it wasn't just, you know, their Saturday. It was much deeper than that. In Leviticus 25, the Lord said to Moses at Mount Sinai, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, when you enter the land I'm going to give you, the land itself must observe a Sabbath to the Lord. For 6 years sow your fields, and for 6 years prune your vineyards and gather their crops. But in the seventh year the land is to have a year of Sabbath rest." The Sabbath to the Lord. What does this mean to an agrarian society? Okay. Not talking about your vegetable gardens here. What does this mean to, at this time, nomadic and is soon to be a settled pastoral agrarian society based on agriculture? What does this mean that every 7 years you don't plant your crops? You don't make money. Okay? This is a big deal. This is not crop rotation. Okay? This is not, you know, a sound farming practice, even though, you know, it helps in that respect. It's not what crop rotation looks like. He says, every seventh year you don't farm. You're a farmer. Every seventh year you don't farm. Do not sow your fields. Don't plant any new crops. Don't prune your vineyards. Don't prune the grapevines so that they produce more grapes and they remain healthy. And do not reap what grows of itself, or harvest the grapes of the untended vines. The land is to have a year of rest. Whatever the land yields during the Sabbath year will be food for you, for yourself, for your male and female servants, and the hired worker and temporary resident living among you, as well as for your livestock and the wild animals on your land. Whatever the land produces may be eaten. But count off 7 Sabbath years. 7 times 7 years. So the 7th Sabbath years amount to a period of 49 years. Then, have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month. And on the Day of Atonement, sound the trumpet throughout your land. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Each of you has returned your family property into your own clan. The 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. Do not sow, do not reap what grows of itself, or harvest the untended vines. For it is a jubilee and it is to be holy for you. Eat only what is taken directly from the fields. So not only did you have, the image, the picture was for you to have this, this seventh day, every week you have this period where you stop. But every 7th year you have a period where the land stops, right? And the land rests, and you rest. Just everything stops on the 7th year. But then on the 7th year, in other words, every 50th year, you hit a reset. You put stop, and not only that, you hit a reset button. And everyone's debts are canceled. Everyone, if you were in dire straits in that period, and your family had to sell their land, or you had to sell yourself into slavery, or you had to, you bought someone into slavery, you hit this reset button. Everything goes back to like it was. Everything, just total cancellation of debts. Everyone is free. Everyone has a home. Okay, it's called jubilee because the Hebrew word for jubilee comes from the root word for horn of the ram, the trumpet. So when you hear, even our English words jubilee or jubilation or jubilant, it's all related back to blowing the horn that signified this 50th year, this reset button where everything goes back to like it should and everyone is free, everyone is out of debt, everyone has enough, and everyone has a home. Yeah. So God's intention for His people was for them to be a Sabbath sort of a people. Not that just you stop once a week, but your entire society is centered around the idea of rhythm, and your entire society is centered around the idea of work and rest. Your entire society knows that it does you no good to accumulate and to strive and to get more and more and more and to strive and to climb the ladder higher and higher and higher and to accumulate wealth and store it up in barns and just get more and more and more and strive and strive and strive. That's pointless. Because in just a few years you're going to hit the reset button. And everyone's going to have enough. And everyone's going to have a home. See how deeply this idea is worked into who God's people were supposed to be. Right? There's no evidence that they ever did that. Right? So, what does that tell you? It's not that important. What is the story like of Israel in the Old Testament? How good a job did they do at being the people of God? Huh? Pretty terrible. Okay? Pretty much from this point on, it's just this travesty, one travesty after another. All right? I don't know, maybe the fact they didn't do this. Huh. Maybe that tells you something. Like I said before, the word we say Sabbath, this word Sabbath just means to stop. It means to cease. And that's something that our culture doesn't tell folks to do very often, does it? It's not very good at limits or at getting enough or at doing enough. It's just, you never go quite far enough. That's just another aspect, or maybe, you know, one of the primary aspects of how the enemy has control over our culture. You know, hopefully, as we've been talking the last several weeks, you realize how different the sort of life that God wants us to live, how different, once we are formed spiritually into the image of God, how different that looks than our society. Again, it's not following these rules, keeping these regulations, just a different shape, a different quality, a different color than everything around us. That's because the enemy has, put it this way, okay, why don't you see people like literally possessed by demons, like explicitly possessed by demons in our society today, and folks going around and casting them out? Huh? There is absolutely zero need for that, because Satan has everything already. He has possessed everything in our culture already. And the media we consume, everything about us, the way we treat each other, Satan, our enemy, has possessed everything already, including so much of what we call church. And one of the primary things about our culture, one of the deepest, darkest things about our culture, is it drives us relentlessly on and on to the next thing, to the next accomplishment, to the next phase in life, to the next project, the next. You're always driven, you're always striving, you're always trying to earn, always trying to get, always trying to obtain, always trying to store up in barns, and always trying to buy someone else's. Right? What you have is never enough. What you are is never enough. You have to get the next thing, and you have to be the next thing. And God says, just stop. In the face of all this, in the face of this culture that is the opposite of a culture shaped by Sabbath, this culture, this society that is an opposite of one that is this easy yoke in Christ, God says, Sabbath, just stop. Just stop. You know, this is one of the defining things of us, right? Busy. I can't. No, I'm sorry. I'd like to do that, but
I'm busy.
Yeah, I'm too busy. Who's ever said that before? I would love to do that, but so I'll put this up here just in case you didn't know what busy meant. Having a great deal to do. Who feels busy sometimes? Yeah. I would love to do that, but I don't have time. I'd love to do that, but I'm too busy. And for a lot of us, it's these things that we are busy with, these things that we are the driven by, they're not bad things in and of themselves, right? And that's the brilliance of of our society. That's the brilliance of it. Because this thing is good, then more and more and more and more and more of it must be good. If being involved in this activity is good, then allow that activity, this one, this one, this one, this one, they're all good, to allow them to consume our lives. That must be good. Right? Now what does God say? Who's Sabbath? just stop. Just stop already. Just stop. Just stop. Just stop. You are perfectly welcome to run yourself ragged. Okay? These laws, this is not like you're going to go to hell if you're too busy, right? Because all things are lawful for me, right? You are perfectly welcome to mow your yard and wash your car on Sundays. No one here is going to talk about you. I promise that. Okay? I promise that. You don't ever have to think about these things. You don't ever have to stop. It's perfectly lawful for you to never stop. 1 Corinthians 6 says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. We are welcome to live our lives in opposition to the rhythm of creation. That doesn't mean it's going to work out good for us. All things are lawful for me. But we have to decide whether or not we are going to be dominated by something. And this incessant drive, this addiction to busyness, this unceasing yearn for the next thing or the next project or the next item or the next, that absolutely can dominate you. Can it not? This is from Rabbi Akiva. I forget what century. This is from Mishnah. I don't know. It's pretty old. And this dude had a real good, very creative way of expressing his ideas. He said, Israel said before the Holy One, blessed be He, Master of the world, if we observe the commandments, what will we have? If we obey these rules and these laws, okay, how are we going to benefit from it? Right? And he said to them, the world to come. If you obey these laws, what you have, what will be a result is the world to come. They said to him, show us its likeness. Show us what it's like, the world to come. Show us what that's like. And he showed them the Sabbath. Isn't that cool? The world to come. The kingdom of God looks like Sabbath. It looks like rhythm. It looks like an easy yoke and rest. It doesn't look like unceasing striving. It doesn't look like busyness that dominates us. It doesn't look like stress. In Matthew 22, Jesus said, was asked, Teacher, what is the most important commandment in the law of Moses? Jesus replied, You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments. So everything's based on loving God and loving people. and everything else, kind of all these other suggestions. I don't think suggestion is probably a pretty light word for laws of God, but all these other things are, they're kind of pointing in that direction to help flesh out how do you love God and love people, right? If you want to love your neighbor, don't covet what they have to the point that you wish they didn't have it and you did, and act upon that. If you want to love your neighbor, don't commit adultery with their spouse, right? If you want to love your neighbor, don't murder them. If you want to love God, it says, you know, don't have all these other deities and just worship other people, other gods other than Him. Be pretty simple, straightforward, right? So what does Sabbath have to do with that? That one is one that kind of sticks out and doesn't, you're not, there's not this straight line drawn to how do you love God and love people by Sabbath. Of all this stuff we've been talking about, how do you love God and how do you actually love other people without sometimes and rhythmically stopping? If you're consumed with busyness, if you're consumed with striving, if you are consumed with working and earning and going on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and obtaining and getting the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, how could you possibly be loving God or other people? You can't. You can't be. So what is the attitude of the Sabbath toward God? And Psalm 92 says, a song to be sung on the Sabbath day. It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to the Most High. It is good to proclaim your unfailing love in the morning, your faithfulness in the evening, accompanied by a 10-string instrument, a harp, and the melody of a lyre. You thrill me, Lord, with all you have done for me. I sing for joy because of what you have done. Oh Lord, what great works you do. It is really easy. It is really easy to never stop. To keep going and going and going and striving and striving and striving. To keep working. Whether it be something, I'm not talking about just, you know, obviously I think you guys get the picture. I'm not just talking about what you do for a job, but just the general state and general focus and general aim of who you are as a person. It's so easy to always keep going. But you will never think about what God does. Because you're doing it all. Or you think you are. But on this Sabbath, in this Sabbath psalm, the psalmist stops and remembers, you thrill me, Lord, for all you have done for me. I will sing for joy because of what you have done. Oh, Lord, what great works you do, and how deep are your thoughts. Only a simpleton would not know, and only a fool would not understand this. Though the wicked sprout like weeds and evildoers flourish, it doesn't matter what everyone else around you has. They will be destroyed forever. But you, Lord, will be exalted forever. Your enemies, Lord, will surely perish, and all evildoers will be scattered. But you have made me as strong as a wild ox. You have anointed me with the finest oil. My eyes have seen the downfall of my enemies. My ears have heard the defeat of my wicked opponents. But the godly will flourish like palm trees and grow strong like the cedars of Lebanon. For they are transplanted like that image, to the Lord's own house. They flourish in the courts of our God. The rhythm of Sabbath is like being transplanting a tree into the Lord's own house, where you can tend it and care for it and see that it grows. Even in old age, it will still produce fruit. They will remain vital and green. They're not stressed out. They're not worried. They will declare, the Lord is just. He is my rock. There is no evil in Him. You know, an easy thing to ask sometimes. I would love to, you know, take Saturday off and just chill, right? Or whatever the day. You know, for us in our family, it's Saturdays, because obviously here on Sundays, you know, this is not very chill. Okay, when I do my job route, which is probably like 10% of the time, I'm like completely smoked. I'm just completely emotionally drained by Sunday afternoon, right? And you guys know what I'm talking about when I do my job and when I don't. But anyway, so Sunday is not a Sabbath for me, for our family. It's Saturdays. And you may think, man, I'd love to just stop. I would love to just rest, but I'm too busy, right? I've got too much to do. You know, if I don't do this, it's not going to get done. Right? But you might ask, this is in the context of the Jubilee, you might ask, what will we eat during the seventh year, since we are not allowed to plant or harvest crops that year? That's a dang good question. Yeah. What will we eat? No. Be assured that I will take care of that. Be assured that I will send my blessing for you in the sixth year, so the land will produce a large crop enough for 3 years. When you plant your fields in the eighth year, you will still be eating from the large crop of the sixth year. In fact, you will still be eating from that large crop in the new crop. It's harvested in the ninth year. What are we going to eat in the seventh year? What God gives you. God is going to take care of this. God is going to take care of you. God is going to take care of this. In fact, He always, no matter what you delude yourself into thinking, He always is taking care of you. You delude yourself into thinking because you plant the seeds, right? Because you pull out the weeds, that you cause these crops to grow, you are an idiot. God does this every year. He is going to see to it that you have what you need. What we eat during the seventh year, since we are not allowed to plant or harvest crops that year? The bounty He gave us. You see, you and your work and me and my work, we really aren't that important. Who takes care of my family? God does. Who takes care of me? God does. Who is going to take care of my family next year? God is. Who is going to take care of me next year? God is. No matter what form that comes in or what that looks like, it may not be, you know, it may not look like the name it and claim it perfectly rich all the time, and the more faith you have, the nicer car you drive. It's not going to look like that. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that whatever happens, God is going to turn it into good. And for crying out loud, stop. Just stop. And live in that. Said Matthew 11, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened." Honestly, I should have asked this question before we started, because now you're not going to be so likely to raise your hand. But who feels weary and burdened sometimes? Like three people now. Who feels too busy sometimes? Who gets too stressed out with the pace of your life sometimes? Yeah. Is that what God wants for our lives? No. What's the defining characteristic of our lives? Come to me, all you are weary and burdened, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. If the yoke you are pulling is hard and the load you are carrying is heavy, and that yoke and that load did not come from Jesus. So, what does all this mean? What am I saying that we should do? Okay? What am I saying that we should do? That I'm suggesting that you try on for size, I guess. Yeah. The idea, like I said, this discipline or this practice of Sabbath, this discipline or practice of stopping, it's important that it be, I think, rhythmic. Okay? That it be, you know, in other words, fairly regular. I'm not saying that you need this. Every person has to have, you know, 24 hours. Ideally, I think it's probably the way it should work. I mean, that's kind of what God said. 24 hours out of every week. Yeah, I don't know, maybe. Anyway. out of every week where you are not trying to be productive and earning and striving and gaining, all right? And so the activities you do, you know, are either bringing mercy and healing to someone else. They are good. They could be defined as good. That they bring life to you. That's what this day was meant for. It's meant for man. You know, this it's a tool for us to be shaped by God. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. We are things that happen on this day should be things that recharge you and bring joy and peace and love into your heart, into your life. Things that bring rest. That don't mean you have to shut yourself in your house and just sit there 24 hours. That would be fine. That would be nice, yeah. Maybe it's exactly what you need to do. You know, if you're thinking, if you go through the week and say, man, I just want to shut down for 24 hours, that's probably exactly what you should do. Okay? And the whole idea of this can seem kind of stressful. Who thinking about this stuff and looking, thinking, I mean, I probably need to implement some of this in my life, and it's introducing stress into your life. Anybody like that? Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Wound tight.
Yeah. Several thousand years out of practice. That just shows how fully we have bought into the idea that we are so incredibly important. The things we do matter so much that the world is going to stop turning if I rest. Some of you really need to work on, you really have to master this art and this science of letting things slide. Nobody really cares how immaculately clean your house is. Trust me. You ladies worry about that. Nobody else does. Nobody goes into your house. Well, depends on how bad your house is, okay? It doesn't matter if your lawn is just, everything is 1.25 inches long and that's it. You know. So many of these things, they don't matter so much. It is okay
let things slide. Because if we don't let some of those things slide, do you know what is sliding? You know what we are letting slide? Thank you. Saying yes to something, there's an opportunity cost. In the economics, right? There's an opportunity cost for everything that you do, everything that you buy, every decision you make has an opportunity cost associated with it. Right? If you spend $5 on, I'm hungry now, cheeseburger, that is $5 you don't have to spend on, a widget. All right? That's opportunity cost. Every time you say yes to something, you have to say no to something else. That's the way the world works. Maybe it's you're saying yes and yes and yes to this activity and this project and this thing and this thing and this thing, and you're saying no to sleep or to peace or to rest or to joy or to happiness. Maybe you're saying yes to all of these things in hope that they will bring joy or peace or happiness or rest when you retire after you've accumulated enough money you can stop, period, and then you'll have all the rest and all of the joy and all of the peace some point off in the future. Is that the life that Jesus gives us? Is that the picture of the life that Jesus gives us? The world to come. It's now. It looks like it's now. He said, I'm giving you the keys of the kingdom. He didn't mean like the keys of the car, and you can start it and take it wherever you want. He didn't mean the keys of the kingdom, and you can see who comes in and comes out. He means the keys of the kingdom. You have access now. You can go in now. You can live in the kingdom of God now. You can live in my rest, my joy, my peace, my love now. And for crying out loud, just stop some of this stuff sometimes and realize that. That I'm God and that you're not. And stop and enjoy this life that I'm trying to give you. So, what do you do? Things that are good and that bring rest and peace. And things that recharge you. And things that bring you closer to God. Now, and like I said, I don't know how I got off on all that. But I got to shut up in a minute. It's important for it to be rhythmic. Because it's hard to get started. All right. There's a such thing as spiritual inertia, right? It is hard to get moving in that direction. But once you do, that's the point of rhythm. The more you go in that direction, the harder it is to get to stop, right? It's got to be intentional. You have to intentionally have this rhythmic idea, whether it's every week, every other week, or every month, or whatever. Because it's so easy to not do it. It's so easy to never ever stop. Alright? To never ever stop. And tell God how good He is. It's so easy never to stop and be thankful. So easy to live in the same house with someone and never be actually with them. And Sabbath is going to this idea of this Sabbath is stopping will look different for everyone. You know, for us, like I said, we started doing it on Saturdays. Yesterday. Okay, here's yesterday. I got up, I slept. Me and Jovi went fishing until late, very late, Friday night. And we got home and we slept. I slept very late. I slept like 8:30 or something, right? So I got up and then I just, what did I do? I got up. Had some coffee, sat around. Shelley had fixed this nice breakfast,
and sat around. Then me and her and Jovi went and played some video games together for a little while. Then we decided, well, we're going to do a little something. So I went outside and worked to put it in like a little garden for a little bit. And that's something for me, a lot of people wouldn't think, you know, I really like to have a garden, but the last few years I've just not had time for it, right? So I'll do a few things in the garden. So then I was halfway through those. I thought, well, that's enough. That's not fun anymore. So then you go inside and sit around a little while. And then I took a nap with Shelly. Jovi went and did something with the grandparents in that part of the day. Then came back, and I got out, and I putted around a little bit in the garden until that wasn't fun anymore. And then Shelly, at this time, she decided she was going to do something. She got out, and she washed the deck off, and then she said, well, that's not fun anymore. I'm going to do something else. So she went to wash. She washed her car. And it was really fun. How often do we wash our cars, guys? You guys know us. And so me and Shelly washed our cars together, and it was great. It was fun. We have never, in our entire marriage, we have never washed our cars together before, ever. And it was cool. It was fun, really. At the end of the day, we always, you know, sit around and think, you know, ask each other what our favorite part of, you know, the day was. What brought you the most joy? For me, it's always the nap. And Jovi really enjoyed, you know, because Shelly never plays video games, but we played Mario something or other. And Jovi said, you know, that time, well, that was my favorite, that was the best. And we just explicitly think about what you're thankful for in your life. What you're thankful for about God. All right. And if, you know, your Sabbath may need to be, you know, you may need to shut yourself off from everyone else, right? Or maybe that's the last thing you need to do. Maybe that is the last thing that would bring you rest and joy and peace. Maybe you need to be around other people and, you know, be involved in some activity, whatever it may be. Just try it. Because I think we can't afford not to. So come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy, and my burden is light.